We are into the second hour. It's Run It Up from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios at Fox Sports Knoxville. I am Peyton Gallagher. That is Justin Scarlett. And this is something new, kind of experimental. So I'm going to do this thing called Sunday's Best, where I literally just tell you the best thing I saw on Sunday. Pertaining to the NFL, of course. I feel like that's somewhat self-explanatory, but just in case.
But we have like NFL on like Tuesdays now, though.
Well, yeah, and I just wanted to clarify, the best thing I saw this Sunday was not the Braves blowing a 3-1 lead. So yeah, there were a lot of really fantastic moments across the National Football League on Sunday. You know, you had Tua, after getting his first NFL snap, going out to the 15-yard line and just sitting there on the field, kind of looking over and saying, hey, I came back from this. And then you find out, well, that the 15-yard line is actually where he got injured. So it had even more significance. Just seeing a photo like that is pretty harrowing. You've got Mike Vrabel out here being a better manipulator of time than Doctor Strange, running 12 guys onto the field knowing it's going to give up a first down but stop the clock.
My coach.
He's a good one, a really good one, better than I think I even thought he was ahead of last year and ahead of this year even. The best thing, though, that I saw was the performance of a cornerback that plays for the San Francisco 49ers. I'm talking about Jason Verrett. Jason Verrett, if you know the name, it's because he was a rising star in the NFL a couple years ago, a first-round draft pick by the Chargers out of TCU. Dominated at the position his first couple years in the league. A real playmaker. And he got struck time and time and time again by injuries. He had multiple ACL tears, an Achilles tear, tore his labrum. In his time in the NFL, his only healthy season, really, he had 3 picks, played 14 games, and was pretty much an all-pro. I actually think he was literally an all-pro. Every other year in the league, I'll read out his games played. 1 game played in 2019. No games played after he got hurt preseason in 2018. 1 game played in 2017. 4 games played in 2016. And only 6 games played his rookie year in 2014. Well, thrust into action, a larger role with Richard Sherman out. San Francisco in a bad place. 2-3, looking at a schedule where their upcoming opponents had a win percentage above 65. Not playing a losing team until mid-December as they head into a Sunday night game against a 4-1 Los Angeles Rams team that looked to be pretty fearsome. You're out at your starting corner. Richard Sherman is not playing. He's on IR. Your quarterback's much maligned. You need somebody to step up. San Francisco gets that play from Jason Verrett, who has an interception, multiple PBUs, big tackles, running all over the place. And it was just really cool to hear Chris Collinsworth talk about, hey, this guy has been through so much. The sideline reporter comes in, Michelle DeFoya, and says, this guy like really had dark thoughts about his football playing career, about his life in general. He had been through the ringer. He was asking, why me? Over and over again. And frankly, it's a question I asked as well. Why is this guy just got the short end of the stick? You hear the injury report, preseason Jason Verrett out for the year was like clockwork. It's just like, when is this guy going to get the opportunity, if ever? And you were starting to doubt that, to really live up to his promise. And last night, on Sunday, you saw vintage Jason Verrett again, which was really, really cool. It was really cool and helped them to win a game they had to win. And it just put a smile on my face, warmed my heart a little bit. That was the best thing I saw. We'll see. Do you guys like that? If you guys like that, we'll continue to do that.
I liked it.
Okay, that's good.
It warmed my heart.
Let's go. After this, Couch Chronicles, my running diary of events as I sat on my couch and watched football for 10 straight hours. Run It Up, WKGM, Fox Sports Knoxville, Fan Run Radio. This is Run It Up from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios at Fox Sports Knoxville. It is time for everybody's favorite segment, or maybe not. I don't know. I'm just going to assume so because nobody's told me otherwise. Couch Chronicles. Yeah.
Yeah.
Turn me up. All right. So the gist of this is that instead of me trying to go game by game and kind of plot along, I just kind of tell you what I wrote down notes-wise from all the games that I was watching as Scott Hansen jerked me around from game to game on NFL Red Zone this Sunday. We'll start off with Eagles-Ravens. This is a close game. Came down to the end. Carson Wentz looked confident outside the pocket, making things happen, trusting his arm. Now, it came in some stretches as a negative as he threw an interception or two, maybe shouldn't have. But it was that magical Carson Wentz thing from that year he almost won MVP where it felt like every jump ball was going the Eagles' way as he threw it up into these how-is-that-not-picked scenarios, and it was a flag or a catch every single time, it felt like.
VFL Jason Kroom caught a touchdown.
He did.
Didn't know he was even still in the league, just hanging on. That Eagles wide receiver core is just something.
Yeah. Once a tight end, might be a receiver now, might be a tight end, I'm not sure.
Pass catching core, excuse me.
Yeah. Okay.
Is that better?
Yes, okay. Absolutely. The two-point conversion play, which it came down to, the Eagles were chasing the entire game. They came back from multiple scores down in the fourth, needed a two-point to tie the game up at 30. I don't have a problem with. I think it was the right play, maybe poorly executed, but Matthew Judon, I believe, is one who he made a fantastic play. Read option look, if you didn't get to see the game, going left. Judon crashes down, and instead of waiting for the offensive players to do something, he just said, I'm tackling both of you, which is how you're supposed to play a read option. You attack the mesh. Judon does that. Carson Wentz pulls it out a second too late and stumbles and falls at the line of scrimmage. Two-point conversion is not successful. Eagles win. Eagles lose. I don't know why I said Eagles win. Ravens win. The other birds.
Caca.
So, yeah, we'll move on from that one. Just a dramatic game that came down at the end to one play. So, felt like I probably should include it. So, can't really ignore this Buccaneers game. The two big ones, the headliners this weekend, were the Buccaneers-Packers, that late afternoon Fox kickoff with Joe Buck on the call, and the Cleveland-Pittsburgh game, where apparently Cleveland is an all-world caliber team unless they're playing the Ravens or the Steelers, because that was rough. But we're not going to go there yet. We're going to stick with the Buccaneers and the Packers. So I think I'm at the point where now I've seen enough to where I might need to walk back some of the criticisms I had of Tampa prior to the year. Tom Brady still is going to determine where this football team goes. But this defensive front is good enough to mask up some of the deficiencies that Tampa has in the secondary. And I just also think Tampa's secondary might not be as bad as I thought they were going to be. Jamel Dean had a pick six of Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers has only thrown three of those in his career. It's like something like six over the last 2 years, just total interceptions. Takes care of the football, but sat on a comeback route, perfectly jumped it. And at that point, the Packers were up 10-0 with the football and were dominating, and that turned the game because it finished, I think, 31-10, and this defense won the day against a team that was playing perfect offensive football, quite literally. The Packers had not turned the ball over once in their first five games. Tom Brady looked fine, nothing special. But with Godwin back on the field, they rolled right along. And this offensive line, which I thought was going to potentially be a problem, Tristan Wirfs has come right in and handles these top-end pass rushers week after week. And when it's not been Khalil Mack, he's looked almost dominant. Kind of took Za'Darius Smith out of the game. The Packers have a very good front. They did not get a sack on the other side of the ball. Aaron Rodgers under constant arrest. The Packers' offensive line is one of the best in the league. And that wasn't a problem for Shaquille Barrett and Jason Pierre-Paul and Ndamukong Suh. The guys like Pierre-Paul and Suh had played as veterans, as guys you thought would probably be on the downslide of their career at a very high level to go along with Shaquille Barrett, who's one of the best pass rushers in the league. The linebackers, Quan Alexander and Devin White, or not Quan Alexander, excuse me, that was their previous linebacker, Levante David, and Devin White move sideline to sideline as well as anybody, and they just kind of play with an edge. I would say to this point in the year, Tampa Bay's defense has been better than their offense, and that's shocking to me. I didn't buy into the preseason hype about the numbers they had put up and what they had accomplished towards the back end of last year.
Also, did you see where just every city that Tom Brady lives in becomes the center of the sports world? Rays are playing in a World Series. Tampa Bay Lightning just won a Stanley Cup.
I saw that. I feel like it's kind of hard to make that argument. I'm not coming at you, but when the Dodgers are in the World Series and the Lakers just won a title. But
it's Tom Brady, man. He went from Boston to Tampa, and now Tampa's
must be Tom.
Everywhere.
It's always Tom, right?
I guess.
He's not been fantastic. He's been good.
He's been a 40-something-year-old quarterback.
Yeah, exactly. And he's made throws down the field that impress you. He's also had throws underneath that you say, okay, that doesn't look great. Not enough zip on that football. We've already been through that. I'm not going to go through it again. Just a waste of your time and my time. But with Tampa Bay, if you will, I think it has gotten to the point where he is going to dictate where this team goes. The defense is Super Bowl good. At least it looks like that so far. They seem to play at a much higher level after a loss, and then that kind of dissipates until they lose again, given we've only seen them lose twice. But they come off the loss the last time, ball out against Carolina, then get even better, and then kind of like struggled with the Chargers, and then they lost again, and then they come out on fire and beat the heck out of a Green Bay team that we presumed was one of the best in the league.
I think the front seven's definitely Super Bowl good.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd go there at this point. The back end, at times, has been kind of exploited, but at times the pass rush gets home so quick that it doesn't matter.
There's really inexperienced. There's not a lot of proven talent there.
And they're getting better with every game. I just think I've come to the point with the weapons that are on this team, with how the offensive line has performed, it is a much more complete football team than I thought they were going to be. So, for them, it's going to come down to, okay, how good can Tom Brady really be at this point in his career? And does that matter? Is this team good enough to win without elite quarterback play week in, week out from Tom Brady? They might be. They might be. I still don't think they're the best team in the NFC, but when they just wallop the team that I think is that badly in national TV, you got to think about it. There's no ways that you can slice it otherwise. And one other thing on this game, really don't like when teams that aren't the Cowboys wear white at home unless it's a white out. Really just think it's a dumb look. Like, why are you wearing your road uniform at home? What's this about? Another thing.
I hate when teams do that, by the way.
I do too.
When teams wear white jerseys at home.
Unless you're LSU or the Dallas Cowboys are wearing some kind of all-white nifty uniform that's supposed to be... I just said nifty.
And the Titans do that all the time.
Yeah,
it bothers me so much.
I hate it. But especially when Tampa... Can we go back? I just said nifty unironically. God. But when you're wearing pewter pants just for the sake of it with a white jersey at home, here's the other thing, though. Teams started doing that for TV purposes, right? Back in the olden days, the road team didn't always wear white. It was just wear a different color. Well, black and white TV, you need to be able to tell which team's which, so one team wears white, one team wears a dark color. Now we've got color television, so we can have color-on-color matchups unless they're too similar. Like, if Tampa Bay is playing the Falcons, Tampa probably shouldn't wear red while the Falcons also wear red.
That would be bad.
But if Green Bay wants to wear green, Tampa can wear their all pewter, they can wear their all red. Really not a problem. I don't know, just a thought. Makes for cooler uniform matchups on TV, I think, in a lot of instances. So that's what I've got to say about that. That ran a little bit long. Justin, did you watch any of the other games in particular? Is there anything that you want to get to here first?
No, not exactly.
Okay.
How about it? Dealer's choice.
Dealer's choice. And we will talk about the Titans at the back end of the hour in more detail, but let's go to the Steelers game. Baker got pulled. I don't think it was as bad as even the Jimmy pulling 2 weeks ago. I think that it was kind of in line with the logic that the Niners presented, where Jimmy was hurt, wasn't playing well, no real reason to keep him out there in a game that they probably weren't going to win. Baker got banged up at the end of the game against the Colts. He was getting hit hard throughout this game. He had thrown two picks, thrown a touchdown. I think he was like 10 of 18. I can pull up the stats to be precise. Thought it was going to be a shootout. One team shot, the other one team The other team didn't shoot. Just a blowout. The Steelers look that good, though. They play the Titans here in a couple weeks. Is that next week?
Pretty sure it's this week. They're supposed to play week 7, right?
Yeah, everything got twisted up with the bye weeks and everything like that. And I know the Steelers were going Cleveland, Baltimore, Tennessee in some order, so this was going to be the pivot point in their season where we find out exactly how good they are. A balanced attack from them. They got 100 rushing yards out of James Conner. We're able to affect the game that way. The Browns' defense hasn't looked so great. The offense has kind of carried them through some games. Steelers' defense really looked emphatically dominant for the first time since that week 1 matchup. They've not looked as good as I thought they could through the early part of the season, but they did in this one. The one thing that is negative for the Steelers, amidst Chase Claypool emerging as this guy, and you still got Deontay Johnson and James Washington and Juju and Ebron and this offense that's putting up points and this defense that gets so many sacks and creates all this pressure. The one downside in all of that is the news that Devin Bush, their middle linebacker they picked early in the first round 2 years ago, a pivotal part, maybe the most important part of this defense, will miss the rest of the year with a torn ACL. That is a huge blow to a team that loves to blitz. Having a linebacker that can run and cover like that, or can get after the quarterback and just create havoc that way, that's huge. That will really negatively impact this team for the rest of the year, and that sucks. But it is the truth, and it's not an injury that can be understated in terms of how we look at this team as a legitimate title contender. It is that big a blow, I think. We'll see how they look against a team like the Titans, against a team like the Ravens, where you would think having a middle linebacker that can get downhill and stick his nose in the fan and also play man and zone coverage at a very high level, having a guy like that would be the most important in matchups against really good run-heavy teams like the Titans and the Ravens. So maybe if the Steelers can get through that, I'll reevaluate. But that wasn't good.
I mean, that's going to be a big game. We mentioned a little bit about that earlier.
Yeah, it's the game of the week next week.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
So, and it's telling for both teams. It's how you know it's a really good game. I mean, obviously they're both undefeated, but I would argue that neither one of them have played schedules all that difficult to this point.
No, absolutely not.
Even though this game was supposed to happen 3 weeks ago, it's going to be tough for the Titans. We'll talk about it a little bit more later, but it's going to be a good game. I'm excited. I'm interested to see. It's going to be telling.
Although, I do think it's a really good matchup for Tennessee. Now, without LaJuan, maybe a little bit dicier against a team that loves to blitz against a presumed non-average starter left tackle. Who knows if it's Wilson or whatever direction they decide to go with that. That's not great, but for a team that loves to blitz, it's really frustrating for edge rushers when they've got to think about Derrick Henry running at them time and time again, and they can't get upfield without having a pause of like, okay, if I get too far upfield here, Derrick Henry is running into the second level, and he's a 240-pound dude against our 200-pound safety. So, got to set the edge.
And the safety can't catch him.
Yes,
also.
Absolutely. So, got to set the edge. That's tough for guys like T.J. Watt. We'll see if that affects things. I actually do think it's kind of a good matchup for the Titans, at least offensively, depending on how well they are able to replace Taylor Lewan. Obviously not an easy thing to do, but something that they could potentially find success with if they are able to. So, moving on from that game, Vikings at Falcons. Wouldn't think this would come up because there are two teams that shared one win previous to this one. Falcons finally got off the schneid.
The one week I don't pick them, by the way. Side note.
They won a football game. Should have known better. Teams coming off coaching firings are at a win percentage bump of, I think, close to 20%. It is a statistically significant sample. Let's look at this game. Falcons offense blew up. Huge Julio Jones day. He's back healthy, balled out. But I don't want to necessarily talk about that, because we know how good Julio Jones is. I want to talk about Justin Jefferson. It's time we pay heed. The rookie from LSU is a star, and he's a star right now. He is third in the league in receiving yards at 537, and Kirk Cousins didn't really even throw him the ball until week two or three. He really came out against the Titans. So that makes that number even more impressive. I don't think they may have upgraded from Stephon Diggs, and I'm not talking down the road. I'm talking right now. Stephon Diggs is awesome, was underutilized. He's getting utilized the way he should be in Buffalo, finally taking up a bigger role in the offense the way that he probably should have the entire time in Minnesota. But the way Justin Jefferson is impacting the game from the slot as a route runner on the outside, a vertical threat that can also work the intermediate area, he does everything that Stephon Diggs did, I think, a little bit better. And he's doing it right now. The guy has arrived. The top five in receiving in the NFL is very weird. It's like Calvin Ridley, Robbie Anderson, and guys like Justin Jefferson. And you're like, where's Julio Jones? Guys like that. Where's Michael Thomas? The primo dudes, they're just not up there right now. DK Metcalf's up there. So maybe it's the time for a changing of the guard at the position. Maybe it's just going to get a little bit younger here over the next couple of years. Because it feels like we've had the top guys. It feels like you were drafting Calvin Johnson in your fantasy league and Dez Bryant not too long ago at the top. And then Odell.
And you weren't. I mean, that's less than 5 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. And then Odell had his little run. It's been the same guys for a long time is what I'm trying to say. And now when you look at the receiving charts, it's a little bit different than it was. Maybe that's a byproduct of how football has changed. Maybe not. I'm not sure. But it does look for certain that we are going to have a new crop of elite receivers in the NFL. Justin Jefferson looks to be one of them. The Vikings have got a good player for maybe Trevor Lawrence to throw to next year. Also, good God, the Jets are so bad.
Yeah, they're awful.
When a guy catching an interception with his butt is the highlight of your season, which I would hypothesize it will end up being.
Oh, by far their best play of the season, at least to this point.
Not great. Not great. The Jets are really bad. Like, really, really bad. Like, maybe the worst team I've ever seen bad.
How did Gase get that job after leaving Miami?
I don't know. It's incredible to me how long he's been able to ride the coattails of him coaching the most prolific offense ever with that Broncos team as the OC, but then you realize, wait, he had Peyton Manning who calls all of his own plays at the line of scrimmage, so what is he really responsible for?
It makes no sense to me.
He was okay in Miami.
Has a job.
They made the playoffs once with Ryan Tannehill, actually. But I think, honestly, at this point, they're keeping him there because they want to be as bad as they can be. They want to lose games, and Adam Gase helps them do that.
They want Trevor.
They want Trevor. And it'll be interesting to see
what
where
if he pulls like an Elway and is just like, no.
What do you mean? Oh, I guess that's possible. If I'm Trevor Lawrence, I don't want to go there, but I don't think
to
that's how he's...
both New York teams.
I don't think that's how he's wired, honestly. I just don't think that's how his mental makeup is. He'll probably just go... Given I don't know Trevor Lawrence, but he'll probably just go wherever he gets drafted and try and win there.
I do not want him to go to the Jets. That's such a waste.
Me either.
That's
me either. A waste. Me either. Me either. But it may be what ends up happening. So, yeah. That. Run it up. We'll continue after this. We'll talk about the Titans in detail when we come back. WKGM Fox Sports Knoxville Fan Run Radio. Closing time here on Run It Up, transmitting from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios at Fox Sports Knoxville. Justin Scarlett pushing the buttons, Peyton Gallagher speaking to you now. So the Tennessee Titans are an undefeated football team. There aren't many of those left, a dying breed, if you will, in
four
the NFL.
Four to be exact, I believe.
And with the Kansas City Chiefs falling, the odds of a team going 16-0 this year are pretty much zero. But the Titans have a chance of that right now, which is pretty cool for them, especially considering how tumultuous that early part of the year was when you think back to Gostkowski missing all those field goals in Denver.
And he's still missing kicks, by the way.
But he's making the important ones, like that extra point to tie the game. I don't know if there's a clutch kicker in the league right now I'd rather have. Which is weird, because he misses a lot of kicks.
This has to be one of the worst percentage seasons of his career, surely.
Certainly. Just take the sock off. He's fine after that.
I guess.
But the Titans find themselves here at 5-0. The defense has not been good. That's the other thing I can't get my head around, is that the defense is giving up points, like serious pointage to most of these teams, aside from Buffalo, where they decided to show up and show out.
Well, Malcolm Butler had two interceptions out of nowhere.
Well, yeah, that's also true. It's just funny to me how the Titans have pushed around the only perceived good team that they've played and struggled in every single one of the games against these teams that have won a combined, what,
Like five games.
Three games between them, five games. So that's kind of weird, but they're winning. They're winning. And that's all that matters.
Just win, baby.
I don't like the Raiders, but I've got respect for Al Davis.
But yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. Justin, you're a fan of the team. You watch them play every weekend. How real do you think it is at this point?
I mean, I think until they prove you otherwise that you have to...
No. Don't give me that. Do you have a legitimate degree of confidence that this 5-0 is indicative of them having a legitimate chance to beat the Chiefs or to win the Super Bowl?
Yes.
You do? Okay, explain it.
I mean, you're looking at a team that was a win away from playing in a Super Bowl last year, played in an AFC Championship game after winning in the wild card and divisional rounds mm-hmm. against a very good Baltimore team in Baltimore in the divisional round, lost to Kansas City in the AFC Championship game, beat Kansas City in the regular season last year.
Correct.
Have started 5-0 this year, have only progressed and gotten better over the last 2 years. I think that's fair to say to this point, right? I don't think we've seen any regression to this point, right?
I would agree with that.
So I think absolutely this team has a chance to win the entire thing, to win an AFC championship, to go to a Super Bowl. They have a chance. I think they probably have as good a chance as anyone else in the AFC right now as far as beating the Chiefs, looking around, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this weekend's going to tell you a lot against a pretty good Steelers team, or at least what looks to be a pretty good Steelers team. But I do think that this game is a game that the Titans should win on Sunday, right? Which I feel pretty confident in that, which I know sounds a little bit ludicrous because you're talking about one of the only other undefeated teams in the league. But I'm interested to see how things play out. It's going to be a little different. Losing LaJuan hurts. It does. There's no other way around that. He's your bookend. He's your franchise left tackle. He's a pretty much an annual guarantee to make the Pro Bowl.
An emotional backbone for this team.
Yeah. A vocal leader, however many other ways you want to describe him, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is that you still have Jadeveon Clowney on defense that hasn't played all that great. You still have Kevin Byard. You still have big Jeff Simmons in the middle making plays, who has been fantastic, by the way.
Yeah, maybe their best defensive player to this point in the year.
Yeah, and say what you will about this defense, but they seem to get it done when it matters, right? They seem to kind of buck up in the moments that they really need to thus far.
Well, Simmons, and by the way, I think Romeo Crennel going for two there, I know the broadcast... They had a shaky end of the game. It's a hard job. It's a job that I've done, so I feel like I can adequately criticize when people I don't think are doing it that well. So, at the end of the game, the broadcast team was saying, I don't know why Crennel is going for two. I would rather go up eight. And my mindset is there, well, if you have an opportunity to ice the game by converting the two-point conversion, that's more valuable than going up eight with a made extra point, right? I would rather win the game right there than dare the Titans to make two plays with Derrick Henry. So I think that was the right call. But the play that Jeff Simmons made, you're absolutely on the nose with it. You said it. Jeff Simmons springs up in a big moment and knocks a pass down. Gives the Titans a chance to take the ball back, go down the field, and win the football game.
And makes Vrabel look like a genius for... Putting 12 men on the field.
So let's talk about that, because it's not the first time he's done it. He did it in New England in that playoff game last year to great effect.
With the delay of games, yeah.
So I think that Vrabel is a big driver of the belief in the Titans, because he's been able to, in the narrow margins, find enough, whatever it is, to win them these football games. They are an incredibly good team in close situations. Clutch. What about him is different than the previous coaches, and what about him to you makes him special enough to give you that belief that the Titans can win it all?
Well, I think it boils down to two things. The first of them is a mentality thing, kind of like we talked about with Pruitt a little bit in Tennessee, in that the team is taking on his mentality, similar to what he was as a player, similar to how he coaches the game, which is pretty intense. It's smart. He just makes it happen, right? That's how he played when he was a linebacker in Kansas City and in New England. That's how he coaches. The other thing I think that can't be understated is the Belichick influence, right? Played for him as a player. He has that experience with him. He knows how he works. And I think that's where he gets a lot of these things. Like the delay of game penalty in the playoffs last year against the Patriots in Foxborough to keep running the clock was literally the exact same thing, the exact rule that Belichick had exploited a few years earlier to a T in the same exact situation, which is why it frustrated the hell out of Belichick, right?
Yeah.
Now, I haven't seen anybody do what he did yesterday because from all the looks of it, going back and looking at the video, that looks pretty intentional, right? He runs 46 out on the field. Jonathan Joseph's like, hey, what are you doing? He's like, oh, it'll be fine. Then he fakes getting mad whenever they throw the penalty because the ultimate thing there is that it's second and one and the Texans are going to probably score, and at that point, time is more important than points, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if that's what he thought of, it worked out well. Now, if it doesn't work out and they lose the game, I don't know if we're sitting here having the same conversation. It always makes you look good to win, right? Because sometimes right. you can be too smart for your own good.
But the analytics there, and analytics are flawed, and they need to be married with good sense and a keen feeling for game flow. But the analytics there would say that on second and one, right? That's what it was, second and one?
Yes.
The offense is going to convert more than they're not.
They have two plays to get a yard.
Right, exactly. So by doing that, I mean, it's been all over the internet, but you are, A, stopping the clock, which is, in that point in time, a primary objective. They saved a timeout, which allowed them to have the drive they did to go down and tie the game. So even though,
and it looks huge because you scored a TD with 4 seconds left to extend
the game. Yeah, exactly, exactly. I just think it's the right call no matter what. Brilliant to think about it. Creative, certainly. That's how this Titans team has to be. They're alternatively constructed. They're not the average NFL build for a contending team anymore.
And that's right, because, I mean, historically the Titans are the Jeff Fisher of the NFL. Obviously, Jeff Fisher coached in Nashville for a long time. The Titans have only ever played in one Super Bowl while they've been in Nashville. That was when McNair was there. That was when they came up a yard short against the greatest show on turf.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is that this is a franchise that will never be a big marquee name in the NFL, regardless of whether or not they win a Super Bowl, right? This team is very much like a Seattle, who now is pretty popular, but you look at historically as an NFL franchise, is a marginal team, right?
Right.
That is going to have to live. It's kind of like in baseball, how you have the big blue bloods. You have the Yankees. You have the Dodgers. You have the Red Sox with, granted, there's no salary cap in baseball, but
yeah,
these unlimited payrolls. And then you have the Oakland A's. And that's what they are. The Titans are the Oakland A's of the NFL, or those similar teams. The Tampa Bay Rays.
That's a good way of putting it.
It's very similar. It's a franchise that has to live on the margins. And whenever they get a chance like this, where they have a special collection of talent, you have to commit. They're in a good contract situation right now where they've been able to retain the right players. They have the core group. They're all pretty young. They have a pretty good quarterback, a guy that's really stepped up in Ryan Tannehill
and
played above expectations.
If he's at this level, his deal is a bargain. The same deal that I was criticizing only a month ago.
Oh, absolutely. So, in that moment, it's the things like that that are going to put you over the edge. It's the money ball, right?
Yeah.
That's what it is. Because if they want to do something like a bigger name team can do, like the Patriots can do, like the Dallas Cowboys can do, that's how they have to do it. It has to be unconventional. It has to be creative. Because the fact of the matter is that they can't just buy it.
Yeah. Is Jadeveon Clowney the best free agent, accomplishment-wise, that the Titans have ever gotten?
I mean, it's kind of hard to say that in the way that Clowney was signed. It wasn't like he was just straight up pulled
sure,
off the free
absolutely.
Agent market. It
I'm just talking about raw production and impact.
As far as a name, probably, right? I mean, I can't think of a bigger one off the top of my head that wasn't somewhat of an aging star or something like that, right?
Like, I literally can't think of the last time I got really, truly excited for a free agent acquisition by the Tennessee Titans.
I mean, most of their really good talent is homegrown, right? You
yeah.
look back. I mean, McNair drafted, CJ2K drafted, Michael Ruse, the left tackle. Pretty sure they drafted him. He was a career Titan, I want to say. I mean, those are, as far as their time in Tennessee, those are some of their best players, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I would say Clowney's pretty easily their flashiest, as far as name brands, free agent signing that they've ever had. And that was in a very odd offseason with COVID, where he signed, what, 2 weeks before the season, a week before the season started?
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a very fair point.
It's just interesting to me. It's a fascinating experiment in zagging when the league is zigging. Like, not everybody can be the Chiefs, right? So instead of trying to do that and not have Patrick Mahomes, but try to do what the Chiefs do, they're going in a different direction. And I've always advocated for having guys who do things well and finding ways to exploit that the best you can. That's what the Titans do. Now, I will say, without LaJuan, you know, the thing that was kind of the identity of this team was those two tackles in the run game and being able to do things that way. That does affect it, obviously, that now Conklin is doing things very well in Cleveland, and you're down LaJuan for the rest of the year. We'll see if the Titans can rebound from that. But theoretically, you have drafted for the scenario. You do have Isaiah Wilson there. At some point, he will play, one would think, so maybe that's not that big a deal. We talked about the defense and how much of a problem that could be. Are you at all worried about the fact that this team is playing close games? I want to say continually against teams that we don't think are that good.
No, I mean, it doesn't worry me all that much. It's somewhat concerning because of some of the sloppiness you see that keeps them in games. Like, the Denver game shouldn't have been that close if you don't miss all those kicks. The Houston game, they went up, couldn't necessarily sustain a lead against a very good player in Deshaun Watson, who's no longer haltered by the mind that is Bill O'Brien, right?
Mm-hmm. Good word. Haltered?
Yeah. So, no, not really, because it's still the NFL, and regardless of what the records say, in the most part, unless you're playing the Jets or one of these teams that's truly, truly bad, every Sunday is still going to be a battle, right?
Right.
And I would say, out of these teams, I mean, the worst team that the Titans have played is probably, what, the Vikings, right?
I'd say the Jags.
Yeah, okay. Fair. And, yes, they played both those teams close, but as long as you're winning in the NFL, I don't know that you can really complain. I mean, what more do you want?
No, you can't do anything else. The Steelers game, again, is just going to be a really good litmus test for this team. If they can win that game, I'm in.
And we thought we had that with the Bills. The Bills now kind of look like a...
Well,
they still look like they're missing some pieces. They don't look like they're quite there as close as these two teams do.
And again, in that game for the Bills, they didn't have Tre'Davious White, who I'd say is their best player. And they didn't have John Brown, who's been a big part of their offense. They didn't have Zach Moss, who's been a big part of their offense whenever he's been healthy. So I do put a little of an asterisk next to that. But, like, Josh Allen did not look good today, given there was pouring rain in Buffalo. But the Chiefs just kind of got whatever they wanted, didn't really play Chiefs football. They ran the ball for more than they threw for. And Josh Allen didn't put up a lot of points on a defense that just got whacked by the Raiders. I mean, he's come down to earth a little bit over the last 2 weeks, I think.
And I mean, I think that's to be expected. I don't know that we could expect Josh Allen in, what, year three?
It is year three, yes.
To really sustain that same pace he was going on. I mean, we're talking MVP-type pace. I don't know that we can expect Ryan Tannehill to sustain this pace,
well,
right?
And let's
he's
talk
a much
about
more
that.
Established guy.
Let's talk about that, because I led the show with that. I don't see why you wouldn't expect it, though, because you're still going to have dudes like Corey Davis when he comes back. That's the thing. The Titans haven't really had their full complement at any point this year because A.J. Brown got hurt week one and Corey Davis was pushing through an injury then anyway. And now that A.J. Brown's finally back, Corey Davis is hurt.
Jonnu Smith got banged up Sunday.
Right, and injuries are going to happen throughout the course of the year, and I'm not saying that you can anticipate, but Jeremy McNichols, who's a player that I loved coming out of Boise State, has popped into this offense and been
productive.
He runs
hard, dude.
He's like, it's like you've got thunder and then smaller thunder. It's not thunder and lightning. It's just this smaller power back that comes in and you don't lose much when Derrick Henry comes out. And then you've got this guy who has registered the fourth highest speed in the league at close to 22 miles per hour on that 94-yard run, who is 6'4", 240 pounds with these long arms that are pretty much like lacrosse sticks that he can just extend and create extra separation with. I don't know if we've seen a stiff arm as impactful as his ever.
By the way, is there a more demoralizing play as a defender than just getting absolutely face-palm, stiff-arm straight in the dirt?
And
I can't think of one.
I don't understand why these DBs aren't going high on Derrick Henry. Just dive at his feet, because at least that way, if you miss, it's not you getting planted in the ground like Josh Norman. But having a guy that's that big, that powerful, that hard to bring down, because his frame allows him to maintain balance pretty easily, that can also run away from your safeties and corners if you get out into the open field. It just is an unstoppable force. And yes, he is worth the money. It's just in a situation where the Titans can't dictate, right? Where even against the Chiefs, they got up. The formula worked. They got up early. They were going to be able to keep the ball and run it. And they got overcome by this supernova of offense that the Chiefs had and had no answer. So can this formula work is the real question. My answer is no, I don't think so. I think it's why the Ravens are fundamentally flawed. I think it's why the Titans are fundamentally flawed, as much as I love the way they play, unless something breaks their way. Where if that was to happen, 2020 would be the year for it to happen. So I guess I just kind of contradicted myself, but yeah, I think the way the Titans are playing right now, they might be a team that inherits a trade situation where they need to make a move, go all in with this core right now, trade some draft picks, and go do something to help them win right now. Maybe if San Francisco falls out of things and you see Trent Williams out there on an expiring deal, you trade like your second round pick for Trent Williams if the Niners don't think they're going to be able to re-sign him. That could be out there. I don't know what trading for AJ Green really accomplishes, but he's a guy who's going to be on the market. Maybe it's a move like that. This defense has to get better. Maybe they sign Earl Thomas. Their back end doesn't need a lot of help, but
yeah, and that's the thing that doesn't make sense to me about this defense is there's a lot of talent on that defense.
Yeah.
All over the place. I mean, you look at...
They're missing Logan Ryan, I think, a lot.
They are. But you still have Kevin Byard in the back end. It kind of hurts that really your third best corner is Jonathan Joseph right now. He's playing a lot. That dude's way too old to really be a starting nickel corner.
Well, and they're going to get Fulton back, who had been very good before he was put on COVID IR.
Yeah, which is tough to... It's just hard to see Jonathan Joseph. He should not be a good defensive player on a contender.
No.
That's just the fact of the situation.
Correct.
Great career, but it's 2020. He's very old.
Right. And then you've got Rashawn Evans running around making plays.
You have him and Jaylen Brown in the middle, which is a pretty solid duo. I mean, there's a lot of talent there. They played together for a few years now. It's hard to complain about the middle of the D-line, too. I mean, you're looking at Jeff Simmons. Jack Crawford across from him.
Mississippi State is just churning out dudes right now on the defensive line. When you think of Chris Jones, Fletcher Cox, Sweat is tearing it up now in Washington, and Simmons, like that's four potentially Pro Bowl dudes.
Yeah, Jeff Simmons is a
he's
a
that
beast
good.
In the
he
middle.
Is that good. He might be their best defensive player to this point in the year. He very well might be.
He definitely has an argument.
Yeah, and he's missed a game too. That's a lot on the Titans. I think the one last thing that I want to ask you with the last 2 minutes we have here is Mike Vrabel, pantheon-wise, amongst the coaches in the league, where does he place now? Because I think coming into the year, you're thinking top 10. With the way things are going, the Titans continually are just getting better. Every single game that Vrabel coaches, they're getting better. So maybe he's making a push for top 5. Would you rather have him over a guy like McVay or Shanahan?
I think that's tough because there's two very different styles there. I mean, you're talking about two really heavily offensive-minded coaches in McVay and Shanahan.
Yeah, sure.
Where Vrabel's kind of the flip side, right? He's the exact complement. He's still a young guy. I think the biggest thing with Vrabel you look at is that being a former player, he's going to be a former player's coach. His guys play for him, but he's also very smart in-game, which we've seen through his use and his way to kind of manipulate the rules. And schematically, it's not like you're losing a lot, which I feel like is kind of the argument you run into sometimes with players' coaches, is that you're losing out a little bit on the schematic side. But I think because of his background, because of his age, because of everything else.
Yeah, where he's been.
Yeah, he just has a team that's very bought into him, his philosophy, plays the way that he wants them to. And I think you see that on the field. I think it's pretty evident.
Yeah, I don't think there's any way you can make an argument against that. The Titans do the most. Sometimes I can't decide if they do the most with the least or if they actually just have a bunch of really good players. But that's our time today. I'm going to leave on a cliffhanger, an open-ended question. We wanted to see if we could get through a show without callers, and we did it. It may not have been good radio. I think it was okay. Okay.
Well, it was good.
Well, that's good. All right.
All right. Till tomorrow.
We'll run it back tomorrow. Got a little bit better today, the people are saying. That person being Justin. Run it up. Back on a Tuesday. Bye-bye.